Hey, everybody.
J.J. Cooper, Carlos Clausa, Baseball America Draft Podcast. Carlos is back, rested, vacationed. I'm here, not rested, not vacationed, but but excited to be getting a chance.
We need to send you on a trip, J.J. That's what we need to do, get you some rest.
You know, but that's coming at some point, I'm sure, but not yet. Actually, we will be together next week, right?
Yeah.
Because we have the we will be headed to Baltimore to check out the
Baseball Factory All-American Game.
Baseball Factory All-American Game, and get a chance to see some of the top high school players like we did last year. I would say, you know, there was a number of guys, but I would say Tome is the one who kind of, that was my first really chance to get eyes on Tome.
Ah, okay. Nice. Yeah, that's a good one.
So, you know, so we'll have that coming up. But today we're going to talk about the college class. Because we are kind of nearing, I would say that we are at the end of the college summer season. I've dropped my daughter back off at school. College is back. So summer is done. And with that, we have a chance to have a little bit better sense of the college class than we did coming into the summer, because that's one of the things that summer is used for. You've been reporting on the USA Baseball top 10 and, you know, prospects, and Jeff Ponce did our Cape Cod League top 25. But I'm just going to start by asking, kind of big picture, here we are now, what's your sense of the state of the college class?
Yeah, I feel like we've kind of gotten different pieces of feedback based on like what people were watching. Like, it sounds like the Cape Cod League this summer is pretty exciting. I know Jeff was very bullish on the players that he got to see this summer. I'm not sure if that's like a significant jump in like the prospects at the event, or maybe just a lot of the top guys performed as you would have liked to see them. But hearing about Jeff talk about how the Cape was this year, I think was encouraging, maybe for the depth of this college class. I will say, for just talking with scouts and being at Team USA for the collegiate national team, it did feel like maybe scouts were a little bit underwhelmed by the prospects there, in particular the hitters, I think. There are a lot of really talented arms. Our top 10 this year from Team USA is going to be led by Thomas Valinkis, left-handed pitcher from Mississippi State. I think he was probably the most exciting prospect that we saw from Team USA. But I think beyond that, there are probably going to be questions about, okay, who are the elite position players on the college side? I like both Gavin Kelly and Landon Hairston, who are going to rank near the top of our Team USA list, but they're both unconventional top of the class hitting prospects for a few different reasons we can get into. I maybe am a little bit more excited about this college class than most of the scouts I talk to, probably just because I'm really excited about the pitching. And if you do want to get excited about a demographic, we've talked about it for months now with this 2027 college class. There is a just huge amount of pitching talent, pitching volume, elite stuff. There are a lot of pitchers who are going to come into next spring with more starting track record than we saw a year ago. Part of that might just be me looking back to this past 2026 class and like lamenting the lack of first round arms. And so it's just scratching an itch that we haven't had for a while. But I am pretty excited about both the top end pitching talent. We've got guys like Dax Whitney, who we didn't even get to see this summer. We might not see him at all next spring. He's kind of going to be looming as this, how do you handle this elite talent? But there are some names at the back of this top 10 list that I'm really intrigued by that we can dig into. But I'm curious from your perspective, JJ, it's always nice to talk about what I think, but you're also kind of overviewing everything we do at Baseball America. I'm curious if you have like a different takeaway or thought or curiosity about this college class as we stand now.
No, I kind of agree with you. Like, if you look at where this pitching class is right now compared to last year, obviously at this time last year, you know, we had Cam Flukie coming off of an exceptional postseason run. But even with Cam Flukie, like Cam Flukie's delivery at the time, it was not like where you said, this is prototypical, what you're looking for in your front of the rotation starter. You had guys, but you pitching wise, you kind of went into the spring with a lot of, okay, maybe this guy can emerge. Maybe
Jackson Flora, who wound up being our top pitching prospect. He was coming off a spring where he basically threw only two pitches. Right. There are real questions about his arsenal. Liam Peterson had his control questions that he never really answered in the spring. And I think to your point about Cameron Flueke, before he dealt with his injury, I kind of was of the impression like, hey, I don't want to do another Chase Burns situation where I overly critique a delivery that's unconventional but works, because it had worked for him. But I do think once the additional injuries piled on, you kind of added questions to how the operation looked. So I do think we're going to have more pitchers go at an earlier spot next year, regardless of what happens. But
the flip side is you look at the hitters, and this is, I think, mm-hmm. we probably where we can start here, is you don't have, like, to compare this to last year. Yes, Justin LeBron had all kind of questions about the hit tool and all that. But Justin LeBron was a surefire shortstop. Right. Rock Chalowski was the top guy in the class, and this was a surefire shortstop who also had a long track record of hitting and was coming off a season where he argued was the best hitter in college baseball as a sophomore. Gavin Kelly had a great season, but we just talked about the Rock Chalowski, Justin LeBron, and we could then get into, you know, many other. There was then the Chris Akopians, there was the Ace Reeses, there was all these guys who had, like, you felt good about their bats, and in a lot of cases, they fit profiles.
Right.
Gavin Kelly's going to be Landon Harrison also. Landon Harrison's going to be fascinating. We'll start him. Landon Harrison was was a standout sophomore, obviously. But that is a profile, corner outfielder, college corner mm-hmm. outfield bat. That doesn't often go. Right. Even the guys who go in the top 10 who end up in corners, usually they're center fielders who then slide over, or it's like they played some of both, or in weird cases, it's like, okay, Harrison Bader was not a top of that class, but Harrison Bader has deferred to this guy, but he probably can play center. Landon Harrison, that's a corner outfield bat, right? That you're really putting all in. If you take him top 10, it's probably going to be entirely based on the hitting profile.
Yeah, and I just pulled up our top 10 Team USA list from a year ago, which you mentioned was headlined by Rock Chalowski, who was very obviously the top player a year ago. We had three shortstops inside that top 10, which for college I feel like is a solid number. This year, and a catcher. Yeah, we've got a couple catchers in this year's list, or potential catchers, I'll say, but no one who had the defensive chops of Von Lackey at the same time. And even Ryder Helfrich, I think, is probably a better defensive catcher than any of the guys we're looking at currently. So there are some interesting players who could play catcher, Gavin Kelly obviously being the most notable one. If you look lower on our list, you'll see Chase Frolick at Auburn, who is another exciting bat-first catcher. But there's the profile there that you mm-hmm. can look at. There's not a single player on our top 10 this year who I would feel confident playing shortstop. I mean, maybe Gavin Kelly is the most likely, but beyond them, I think the best defender at Team USA was Nico Partita, who's a third baseman and does not move like a player who's going to play up the middle. So I do think if you're going to critique the college hitting demographic, the middle infield is maybe the biggest question mark. And part of that is also because Brendan Lawson is maybe the top ranked shortstop in the class. If you consider him a shortstop, I mean, he's bigger than a typical shortstop. A lot of people think he's maybe likely to play third base, first base, but he's Canadian. He didn't play for Team USA. He didn't play this summer. So we're really going to need to see a lot of what he does next spring to bear down on him. But yeah, circling back to the guys you mentioned, and you said, let's start with Landon Harrison. I kind of buried that a little bit. But Harrison is a really unusual top-of-the-class bat. I think he might be the best offensive player in the class. I think his pure hitting ability could warrant that. And despite the fact that he went just 3-for-16 in four official games with Team USA, I think scouts saw what they were expecting to see for him throughout trials with the stripes and the stars. I know there are some questions about how he handles left-handed pitching. If you look at his two-year platoon splits with ASU, he's been significantly more productive against righties, which is what you would expect. But I do think there are going to be some questions for him going into the spring about how does he handle lefties? How does he handle left-on-left spin? I actually thought he looked pretty good in some really high-profile left-on-left matchups against Team USA specifically that don't show up in his offensive numbers, if you're just going to USA Baseball site and kind of looking at how did everyone perform in four games, he was the hitter I expected him to be. He's got great rhythm. I thought he sees the ball really well out of the hand, again, from both righties and lefties, which was encouraging to me because that was something I was in particular bearing down on him. But to your original point, I don't know that he's anything more than a left fielder. He played left field and first base with Team USA. I mean, going from left field to first base isn't super exciting. I think he can move around well enough to play an outfield corner. But you are right that, like, if you're drafting him in this range, you absolutely have to nail the offensive evaluation. And that can be tricky. A lot of the times, players who are going at the very top of the draft are going there because they hit for power, they can run, they can play premium defensive positions. You're kind of immediately taking that defensive component off the table with Landon Hairston. And I do think that could allow some players in this class next year to kind of pass him over if they come out and perform or if he takes a step back offensively. It is an unusual profile to have stuffed this high. And I think that's probably part of the reason scouts seem a little bit down on this college group or this Team USA college group.
I can come up with three outfielders taken in the top 10 this decade who I would say you would call corner outfielders, right? Like, and right. Again, I'm not saying they've never played an inning in center.
And I'm guessing the guys, I'll be curious, the guys you mention, how physical they are. Because Landon Hairston is not the tallest and biggest player in the world. So yeah, I'm curious to hear the names you got here.
Heston Kjerstad.
Yep.
Gavin Cross. Charlie Condon.
All much more physical than Landon Hairston, at least in terms of like size. And no, I'm not sure.
If not in terms of home runs.
Exactly. I was about to say, I'm not sure if that will be a continued like issue for teams, because we have seen teams in the 2020s just be more willing to take shorter players if they have the hit tool, if they have the power. And Landon Hairston clearly has power. I don't know that there are any real questions about his impact ability at this stage. But yeah, I don't know. That group, does that make you more or less excited about potentially taking Landon Hairston high? I would think that's the case.
Let's be clear.
Right?
Like, at this point, Heston Kjerstad did make the majors, but has been a disappointment. That's the second pick overall, and that is not the production you want for the second pick overall. Gavin Cross has been had a nice little run recently, very recently, but is, you know, not a guy. If you were drafting that over, you would not come close. And by the way, you could throw I'm not throwing AJ Gracia into that yet, because from this year's class, he also was a top 10 pick. But he also was, the bonus wise, he was not a top 10 pick.
Right. And you could also, if you were looking at just corner guys, you could say like he at least played center field. I'm sure he's going to be run out as a center fielder and get a chance, even if we think he's probably more likely.
He's much more in that profile. Yeah.
Right.
That, like we said, he's the guy who, like, again, if you wanted to keep going on this, I think the other top 10 pick in the last decade you could add would be Corey Ray, who again was the college center fielder who was going to slide over, which is a little bit different profile. But again, like what we're just pointing out here is this is not necessarily have anything to do with Landon Hairston, but these are guys where it's like, when you do that, you better really hit on the bat, because just a little bit of, I like to say it this way. The hit tool is the hardest thing to project. If you're one grade off on the hit tool on, like you said, let's say you're one grade off on Justin LeBron, who already was like a shaky hit tool. Well, he's still going to keep kind of climbing the minors as a shortstop who may have time to figure it out.
Right.
If you're Gavin Cross and you don't hit for average or power significantly, there's not really a whole lot else for you to do to help a club.
Right. And by the way, you mentioned Justin LeBron. As we record this, doing pretty well right now in high A. He has four home runs in his first 35 plate appearances. The strikeout and walk rates are quite scary. But it is nice to see him just having an electric start to his pro career, because his tools are exceptional. But there's no player in this top 10 with that tool set, that athletic foundation. And circling back to Gavin Kelly, who I also mentioned as kind of an unconventional top of the class college hitter, I'm not sure if you can figure this query out as I'm talking about him, but Gavin Kelly to me is unusual because he does not have a lot of physicality. We have him listed at 6 foot, 175 pounds. Specifically the weight threshold there, JJ, I'm curious if our database or just
give me a second
draft databases in general, I would imagine a college hitter who's that light being drafted in the top 10 is pretty unusual. He just doesn't look like a typical top of the class position player on the college side. To me, it stands out when you watch him. But at the same time, his offensive performance is spectacular. If you wanted to say, hey, I prefer Gavin Kelly's hit tool to Landon Harrison's, I think you have a very solid case to make that. He had better performance in Team USA's official games. He was hitting third in the lineup right behind Landon Harrison, who was hitting second in I think basically all of their official games. He finished third in hitting. He hit .474, led the team in total hits. He went 9 for 19. It's an efficient bat path. He has quick bat speed. He gets his hands loaded early into a good hitting position. I liked everything like mechanically about the swing. He also had a significant jump in power output in his second year with West Virginia. He went from just 2 home runs as a freshman to 19 in 2026 while hitting .382. But there are some questions with Kelly. The physicality that I mentioned, like, is that power going to translate to Wood? I'm sure that's going to be a question for him. And then maybe more importantly, where is he going to play defensively? Because he split time at catcher and second base with West Virginia. He got some time during trials with Team USA at catcher, so we got to see him at the position a little bit this summer. But he also DH'd full-time for the actual college national team. I think that's probably more because of like the surrounding cast. It's probably a better lineup to have him DH and get guys like Frelick into the lineup, get guys like Riker Waite into the lineup, who is playing second base. But that's definitely going to be an area that scouts are really drilling down on him during the spring. Does he do enough defensively to stick at the catcher position? How will that catcher position, how will his body handle the wear and tear and just the durability required? I mean, again, I would be curious to see like who are the lightest major league catchers who are full-time catchers. I imagine that list is pretty short if you're just looking at what Gavin Kelly is now. But this is another player who you're really excited about the pure hitting ability, the offensive impact, the approach, the pop that he's shown. But beyond that, I think you're going to want some more clarity next spring.
Okay, so I'm just doing this right now. I used our draft data because I wanted the weights at that time, not
correct.
As they, right. A guy gains weight as a pro. I didn't want to do that. So right. In the 2020s, I found very few players who are in that range. The
college players or players overall? Okay.
Overall, it's like Aide Ruiz was the highest rated player we had last right. year who was lighter than that, right? You don't right. see a whole lot of 170s. Period. Mm-hmm. But the last college guys that I have seen that, you know, we had as top prospects were Braden Taylor was listed at 165 and Enrique right. Bradfield at 170 in the 2023 class. Now,
right.
Enrique Bradfield is a 80 runner.
And I think with both those players, like Bradfield's defensive profile is obviously speaks for itself when you hear his name. But I even think Taylor at the time, like, everyone was pretty confident that he was going to be a rock solid defender at third base. And you also felt like he could play kind of all over the infield. Maybe Gavin Kelly will become that same sort of athlete who you can envision him at multiple middle infield or infield spots. But that, like Nick Madrigal was the other guy I thought about. He was obviously very small. Matt, I know it's before that 2020s.
I'll keep going back to that. Matt McClain was the other.
Okay. Yeah. Matt McClain. I'm also curious how physical was, Angels shortstop out of Campbell. I don't know why I'm blanking Zach on Neto. His name. Zach Neto. He wasn't bigger. The biggest player in the world. He might weigh more than 175 at the same time, but that's another player who kind of sticks out to me. But I don't know, JJ. Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I'm looking, but like, yeah, like Peyton Graham, who was kind of on the fringe, was a 171. Mm-hmm. But I bring this up partly because I would say with a lot of these guys that their lack of strength has been like with Matt McClain, I wrote him up for the Reds. And like, when you said like, what was the biggest concerns of him? He was a solid big leaguer. Let's be clear. Like, this is a success story, but scouts would say, like, he visibly wears down during the season, right? And we've seen that even in the major leagues, I would say, staying healthy and staying kind of at that level of strength have been challenges for him. Braden Taylor, I would say, is like, I would say he's kind of taken a different prep. It's about how much power he's trying to hit. Sometimes the swing gets a little steep. But, I mean, Enrique Bradfield, his lack of power, I would say, is in some ways limited to him. Like, he's still not in the big leagues yet. Probably going to make it. But I would
and
say,
Kelly, like, Kelly doesn't have that carrying tool of speed and center field defense that Bradfield does. So I think there are similar questions that we had with Landon Harrison. If you miss on the hit tool, if the hit tool is not as good as you're expecting, what are you left with then? There are just maybe fewer athletic tools, secondary tools, loud, explosive tools with both Kelly and Harrison. Maybe less confidence in where these guys are going to play long term that I think are just going to add a lot of pressure to them from just a pure hitting standpoint next spring. They're really going to need to perform to maintain their status at the top of the class. They could easily do that. They can improve some of these secondary skills. Gavin Kelly could maybe have a great offseason and really come out looking like a no doubt catching prospect. I think in particular, there's some things he could do with kind of the arm action and how the arm works behind the plate. Maybe he adds more strength, and so you have fewer questions about potential durability issues behind the plate. But I just do think that, obviously, I can't come back every year and say there's no Rock Chalowski in this class because he's not a player that's going to come around every year. But I think you just look around at the hitting in this group, and I think there are just a lot of questions that you're going to have, where that's maybe not the case with the pitching that we can get into as well, unless you have more thoughts on the bats.
Just a couple of things on that. To answer your question, Nick Madrigal is listed 165. So, and I would say
the under on that.
But I would say that Nick Madrigal's 165 ended up being very much a limiting factor for him as a pro.
Right.
The other thing is you don't really see 170-pound catchers in the bigs. Now, obviously, he would gain weight, but you don't see 180-pound catchers generally in the big leagues. That, I would say, is a legitimately limiting factor potentially for him as a catcher, in that Garrett Stubbs is a little bigger than that, but Garrett Stubbs, who's kind of been this long-term kind of backup and, you know, and up and down guy and all that, I would say that Garrett Stubbs is a guy who, one of the things we wrote about him when he was on the cusp of the big leagues, was teams didn't really think that he could be an everyday catcher, partly because of his lack of power, but partly because he just wasn't big enough. They think he could help a team, but you're not going to say, oh, this is your guy who's going to catch 100, 110 games. I think with Gavin Kelly, beyond the fact that also I would throw out, talk to a scout about this, no catcher who's an elite catcher. I know that Von Lackey played other positions early in his career, and Von Lackey would play a game every now and then elsewhere just to give him a rest, right?
Right.
But
or to show that he could play every position on the field kind of as a flex.
But Gavin Kelly, they kind of moved him back and forth, and partly I think because of his size. But that is, I would say, if I was a team, I would look at that and say, I'm less certain about him as a catcher than I am about some of these guys we just rattled off, partly because of this. So,
yeah, and I'd also say, too, one of the things that was brought up to me about just the catchers in general at Team USA is a lot of these catchers were kind of critiqued for their defensive ability. And if you're Gavin Kelly and you didn't kind of come out and say, hey, I'm going to be the starting catcher, put one of these other bat-first catchers in the DH spot that I was in the whole summer, like, why didn't he win that catching job when there wasn't a Von Lackey to be like, oh, clearly he's like a potential Gold Glove defender? So I think those are going to be real questions that we'll need to see how they're answered next spring.
So now we're going to dive into the pitchers a little bit more. The more intriguing part of the class. We'll do that right after this quick break.
SeatGeek is the official ticket marketplace for Major League Baseball. And anytime you want to go to a game, you should go to SeatGeek. I used to call the director of team travel. I used to call the traveling secretary, whatever they want to be called, KP, to try to get a seat. But on SeatGeek, I can pick my own seat and I can pick where I want to sit instead of being told where to sit.
Yeah, it's a great option. And summer is coming to an end here soon. I'm going out and finding all the day games possible, all the warm weather cities, so I could stay in this tank top, I can watch very competitive baseball. As the calendar turns into fall, I want to make sure that I get the most out of this tank top and warm weather, and SeatGeek is where I would go and get my seats.
You can use code TERRITORY10 for 10% off your next set of MLB tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off MLB tickets with promo code TERRITORY10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later.
So, Carlos, the pitching side, we have a lot more here that a lot more players who I would say fit what you would standardly view as guys who could go in the top 10, top 15 picks. Fair?
Definitely fair. And I think at the top of the board, what Thomas Valencia has shown so far with Mississippi State makes me more excited about him as a top of the class arm compared to anyone from a year ago. Cameron Flukie, Jackson Flora, Liam Peterson. I think he combines track record, power stuff, command, and delivery in a way that I have fewer question marks about his profile at this time than any of those three pitchers you could name. And so I think the starting point for our pitching conversation in the college class is already higher than it was a year ago. That's not even to mention maybe the most talented pitcher in the class, Dax Whitney, who, again, we're not going to see him throw for a while. He was number two.
Let me ask you, you said maybe. Is there even a maybe to that if he's healthy?
Probably not. I think you might be able to find some scouts who prefer Valencius because he's left-handed. I do think he's a really talented pitching prospect. I think the overwhelming opinion in the industry would be that Dax Whitney is the top pitching prospect in the class. I think if he's healthy, he's probably just the number one college player in the class. I think Dax Whitney versus our top high school player, Dylan Seward, would be an interesting conversation. I could see people landing on either side of that, depending on like maybe your risk tolerance for pitching versus those elite shortstop prospects that everyone loves. But if Whitney was healthy right now, I would imagine he's probably the top overall prospect in the class for us, college or high school. But I do think even beyond Valencia, who I know we'll talk about plenty, so I want to kind of move down this list to a few other really interesting names. Maybe the most exciting name for me, a player who I really like and who I felt like he dominated, was Camden Clark, who's a right-handed pitcher at Southern Miss. He didn't make the final Team USA roster, but I feel like his combination of delivery, command, and freaky fastball traits makes him one of the more interesting players in this class. I was watching from behind the plate when he was pitching for Stars and Stripes, and he was getting a ton of miss on a 93-94 mile per hour fastball that was just one of those invisibles at the top of the zone. When you watch the pitch, I think now that we know more about the pitching data, you can immediately say, okay, there are going to be a lot of fastball traits here that are like checking off these analytical boxes. And sure enough, you look at what the pitch did last spring with Southern Miss. It averaged more than 21 inches of induced vertical break. Even for college, that's a pretty elite number. That's near the top of the scale for like a...
Could we just interject there just so people who don't know? When you hear this for college, with the college baseball, that does not translate one-to-one to pro ball. The pro ball,
correct.
It is harder to generate induced vertical break with the pro ball than it is with the college ball.
There are differences in the seams that just allow you to, I think, get more movement. I also think there are still some calibration issues in college that maybe can make the top pitchers look even more extreme than they actually will be at the next level, even beyond like the ball differences. But either way, that's towards the top of what we tend to see for like full-time pitchers who have a lot of fastball data in their mix. He has a below average release height, which in this sense, I mean, as a positive.
It's unusual.
The combination of his ride, where he releases the ball from, and an extremely flat vertical approach angle, it's minus 3.85, which is, again, anything under four, I think, is elite. That's a pretty standout number. The velocity in and of itself is fairly vanilla, fairly mediocre for some of our top pitching prospects. He sits around 93. He'll touch 96, 97. But because of those movement characteristics and release traits that he has, it plays exceptionally well. He gets a ton of swing and miss with the pitch. And my favorite part about all of this is he ties it together with great fastball command. He really fills up the zone a lot. I don't think he really even needs to be precise with that fastball now for it to be effective. But while pitching as a starter and reliever, he had just a 5.3% walk rate last spring, which really excites me. I'm going to want to see more from his secondaries, which were effective against the competition he was playing, but I think do lag a little bit behind his fastball now. And obviously would like to see him perform as a full-time starter, but I think he maybe has one of the more exciting fastballs in the class overall, just given those traits. And I felt like he kind of dominated in the time that I watched him. So he's one of the names that if you're not aware of him, not familiar with him, because he's not like in the Whitney Valencia's tier now, he could easily be a first round pick.
The other part of this class though, on that college side is that, okay, the other part I want to kind of ask with this is how many guys kind of fit in that group where they would be equating to where the Cam Flukes, where the Liam Petersons were last year, right? So to give a sense of this, you just talked about some of the guys at the top. We've said Dax Whitney's going to be a weird case, but like how many of Mississippi State's rotation members would fit in that group? How many guys from Texas fit in that? You're like,
right.
Like my question is like to just get a sense of this class, like, would you say that Cam Flukes clearly above would be at this time last year, clearly above the second tier of guys that we're talking about behind the, you know, the clear top two? Or is it more of like, no, these guys are kind of fit in that same range?
I think looking at our board now, looking at some of the names, if we say Thomas Valencia's and Dax Whitney are in a tier of their own ahead of everyone from last year, I think there is a group of 7 to 9, maybe even 10 players in the second tier who I'd say would fit in a similar talent range to the trio from a year ago. So those are names for us that would include Chris Lavonis at Wake Forest, Landon Mack at Tennessee, Dylan Valantis and Sam Cozart at Texas, Ryan McPherson definitely at Mississippi State. I don't think I would include Duke Stone at Mississippi State in that group right now, but if you wanted to, I think it's defensible. You get to Kaysen Evans and William Schmidt from LSU, Camden Clark, who I just talked about, and then Aiden King at Florida. He's also going to crack this Team USA top 10. Aiden King is not exactly my cup of tea just because I don't know like what the standout pitching trait is for him, but he also is going to enter the spring as one of the more well-established starting pitchers in this class. His two-year track record with Florida is pretty tremendous. He pitched well in the summer. He checks a lot of boxes. He's a lean. He's got a fast arm. So I think there's a pretty massive group who all feel like first-round picks to me now, and sorting through that group next year I know is going to be a real challenge for scouts. It's probably going to be a headache for us, but these are one of the challenges in covering the draft that's a lot of fun because they're not difficult to sort out because we've kind of gotten into this like vanilla grouping. They're difficult to sort out because they're all really talented. They've all done a lot of things really well positively, and you're kind of picking and choosing what are the traits you most like and what are the weaknesses that you feel like are most addressable at the next level. But I do feel like, again, maybe 6 to 10 players, I feel like all could fit in that second tier at this stage right now. It's very, very deep on the pitching side.
And that's where we would say, like, the key part of that to me, what I get excited about with that is not that every one of those guys is going to be where Liam Petersen or Cam Flukes or Jackson Flora ended up being last year. Right. But there's that many guys who could be in that range or could be better than that, by the way, because again, you can have Cam Flukes his stock did not go up over the course of the season. It went down. It happens, but you have these many guys already there. And that's before you allow that. There's, like we said, Jackson Flora is a perfect example of, there are going to be guys who are not right now anywhere around that range who make the case to kind of move themselves in. Basin Edwards at this time last year was not a guy who'd be like, oh, he's, you know,
I mean, even Cade Anderson, Liam Doyle, Cade Anderson, who was right before we were recording this podcast, we heard the news that he was going to be promoted to the majors. Really excited to see what he does. Like Cade Anderson, we had on our top 100 entering the year, but he wasn't in the range where he wound up fitting. And I think part of that is because he hadn't gone out and did what he did his draft year. And also part of that is just like, figuring out which are the right college pitchers to have high on your board early in the season can be tricky. And I've mentioned this a few times now, but I'm excited about this class because I do think systemically it'll help us maybe to correct for an area that we kind of go into each spring a little bit too light on the college arms, a little bit too high on high school arms. This is the perfect class for us to try and kind of address that and get ahead of who are the arms who are going to actually go out and perform and move up. So I'm looking forward to like a year from now seeing, okay, did we handle this demographic more effectively than we have in the past? That's definitely one of my goals for this year's group.
That's a good thing to end this on, which is, okay, spell that out. We've talked about this, but I think this is something useful. Again, we like to show to help people understand our process. And this is something we've kind of evaluated that we realized is that just the nature of the calendar has kind of led us that way a little bit, hasn't it?
Right. Yeah, I think so. The way I would say it is I think each year we tend to see college pitchers move up our board and high school pitchers move down our board. And part of that is because a lot of college pitchers come out and improve and perform and do improve their draft stock. But I think part of it is also that we have systemically been a bit too high on the high school pitchers and too low on the college pitchers from our preseason starting point. And I think the biggest reason for that is probably because we spend a lot of time watching the high school arms in person in more abbreviated, shorter outings where they're dominating, and they obviously look good. And I think last year's high school pitching class was talented, but I think we tend to just start those guys a little bit too aggressively on our board. And maybe there are more college pitchers who are out of sight, out of mind, either because they didn't pitch at all over the summer or we didn't see them in person over the summer.
More generally the first, which is that you do see now a lot of the top pitching prospects either don't throw at all or throw so abbreviated a workload that it's something that you're stuffing. Right. There's no signal there.
So I think hopefully doing more expanded underclass coverage will help to correct for that. But we should be weighting college spring performance from these 2027 eligible arms more than what did they do in the summer. Because if they're just not pitching, that doesn't take anything away from who they are as draft prospects. And so we basically just want to get those guys ranked in a more appropriate spot. And also I think part of it too is being more aggressive maybe in reacting to fall, what we're hearing, not necessarily performance and results from the fall, but chatter from scouts about pitchers and what they're doing in the fall. Because Mason Edwards, who you mentioned, I think that's a great one. Like we'd heard really good feedback about what his fall looked like, the jump in power that he showed, just how he looked as a pitching prospect. We moved him up slightly on our preseason board, but we were hesitant. And part of the hesitancy was because, okay, like we've heard this, that sounds great in the fall. You got to go out and do it. I still think there is always going to be kind of a balancing act between those. But that's kind of how I'm thinking about our pitching process, how it's been in the past, how we can improve it moving forward.
It's funny because there's a college podcast that'll be coming out next week that Jake and I recorded. And we were talking about kind of the value of fall ball and how you don't want to overreact to it, but you do want to report and react to it. And he used an example of a hitter, which was Daniel Jackson coming out of his first year at Georgia out of Wofford, wasn't really there was nothing about him that said, ooh, this is a prospect. And then the fall ball kind of was like, this guy's more physical. There's a lot more here. Now, you're not going to say, oh, let's put him in the top 50 at that point.
Right.
But it was an indication. And again, the problem with this is that we always are is the balance we're trying to do here is to react, but not overreact. But we're also trying to recalibrate here a little bit. I think this is the perfect class to help us recalibrate because sometimes it's a lot tougher. I do think it's getting easier now in this way from the standpoint of with the way college baseball is kind of trending. If you are performing in a rotation as a sophomore, that kind of is and you have stuff. That's a special, that's a special kind of category already. You know, the game's gotten a little bit older, but as we have really tried to be better and better on our underclass list as well, like this is, I think that when you talk about these college pitchers, there are so many college pitchers in this class who just have a track record that if I'm a team, I feel way more comfortable about these guys than I can about almost any high school arm because I have track record. They've gone through a little bit of the durability and injury nexus, all these aspects where you're like, if you come, it's going, I do think this is also going to push. We talk about the high school arms always kind of end up sliding into that supplemental first round, except for the very few elite ones. I think this is going to push it further because
agreed.
A year like last year pushes them up a little bit where you're like, okay, yeah, he's a prep pitcher, but do I like any college pitcher better than this guy? No.
Right.
This year, you're going to have guys who you're going to like better.
Yeah, agreed.
So that is the Baseball America Draft Podcast for this week. We are back. Carlos is back and raring to go. And we do hope that you check out everything over at baseballamerica.com. Speaking of, go check out. We've got a piece over there about the 2027 draft class. We'll just leave it at this. We'll tease it this way. The 2027 draft class just got a little bit deeper. There has been a reclassification. Ben Battler had that, you know, so by the time you're listening to this, that'll be up at baseballamerica.com. Go check that out. Also, there is the Cape top 25 up right now. Carlos is wrapping up. We will have the USA Baseball top 10 up shortly as well. So a lot of stuff. Check out at baseballamerica.com. And as always, please like and subscribe. That helps other people to see our content. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.